think I actually know how to hack this.
In a world completely overrun by
thinking about just doing cold opens. And
there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hatch.
Hello, welcome to the Magical Talking Hat, the only podcast, the only podcast that feels flattered that Muammar Gaddafi has an album full of pictures in his palace of us.
He does?
Yes.
Wow.
Isn't that sweet?
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah. I'm Tony.
And I'm William.
And this is episode...
24. How does he know they're photos of us?
What do you mean, how does he know?
Well, like, where are there photos of us, really? I suppose
behind
on Facebook.
Behind the album of Condoleezza Rice. Didn't you hear? This is where it's come from.
Yeah, but everybody
Rebels,
knows...
like, took over his...
Yeah.
Palace, and in there they found an album full of pictures of her.
Okay, but everybody knows what she looks like.
Everybody knows what I look like.
Oh.
And they assume if there's a guy hanging out with me, it must be weird.
It must be me.
Who's that up there with Tony? Must be William. So, welcome to episode 24. Our special guest, Kiefer Sutherland. Sorry. I would like to pause before we get into our usual festivities for a moment, because apparently I have created a grievous error, and I was chastised for this.
Okay.
In all my praise of our small but loyal hardcore fan base, our hard hats,
hard
if
hats.
You will.
Yes.
I apparently have not included our great and much beloved slash hated Blue Claw.
What?
In the grand scheme.
What do you mean?
I have not ever named him as a hard hat.
You haven't?
No, because he's been mysteriously silent lately. Hasn't been submitting a lot of questions. The big thing is hasn't been having much response on the blog.
Mm.
And so I kind of thought maybe he had slipped by the wayside, as others have. But no, I was ganked on Facebook by Azure Talon. Lamenting the fact that he was not a hard hat. So I should say, Azure Talon, definitely a hard hat. Been with us since episode one.
And sometimes had entire episodes dedicated just to him.
Sometimes had entire episodes. Twice, but only one of which made it to the air.
Yeah.
Because episode 12 was all about the Azure Gito Zord.
Yeah, now wait a minute.
That will never...
So this is our 24th episode.
Yes.
Does that mean we're going to have a hiatus? You know, because a lot of TV shows, once they get to the 22nd...
The following 23rd. Is recorded between 7 p.m. and 8 p.m. I don't think so.
Okay, no. Okay.
Man, if we were going to have one, it was going to be tonight. I'll tell you, this is one of these nights where... I mean, I like doing the podcast in general, but the commitment of every week... This is one of these nights where if I wasn't, you know, feeling the love, I'd been like, screw it. Because it was a rough day. And sort of fit in as a rough week as a whole.
Really?
Yeah, not like, you know, like somebody killed my puppy or something. Like, just work has been really busy. And it's been that stuff where, like, I run around all day. Mm. And I know I do stuff, but at the end of the day, I'm like, what the hell did I do? And it's been like that every day this week. And today, especially, all day I was doing one job, and at the end of it, I really don't have much to show for it. And I screwed up a lot of things, like, myself, and so I had to redo parts of it, and so today was just really frustrating. But there was a bright light at the end.
And that's me?
No.
Oh.
There was a bright light before you.
Okay.
There's light, and then you're the train.
Okay.
I'll skip the details, but everybody at the company got a bit of a bonus.
Oh, nice.
And it varied how much, there were two stages if you were, like, new or if you'd been there a while, but they counted contingent time, and I had been there for a long time there, so I had enough hours, so I got the full, the big one. And it happens to be pretty close to exactly the amount it will cost for me to buy the Dresden Files RPG books, which I have been trying to save up the money for months.
Are you ready for them? Or
not quite.
Because you have to get to book 10, you said? Or?
Yes, and I'm almost done with book 9.
All right.
Which I'm not enjoying as much.
Oh.
It's not... It's a personal thing. Like, there's nothing wrong with the book or the author or anything. It is dealing with subject matter that I find particularly distasteful.
I see.
And so it is harder for me to deal with, and I will be glad when it is done. In terms of the craftsmanship, it's perfectly good. So.
So have you seen the TV show or not?
I have not yet. I plan to.
Okay. Because Sarah didn't like it, the TV show.
Yeah, which confused me. She had a very strong reaction against it, which to me implies she read the books and thought that the TV show was so horrible in comparison.
Yeah.
But then I find out she's never read the book, so apparently she just thought the TV show stunk on ice its own accord.
She didn't read the books.
No.
Oh.
She hasn't read the book. She wants to, but she hasn't.
So what didn't she like about the show? I don't
know. We didn't get into a lot of detail on it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought she reacted so strongly. I thought, well, she must have thought it didn't.
And it makes me nervous. Sarah, if you're still listening, which I know you're not, be careful then about the books. Because, I mean, there are large differences, but I don't know what exactly you hated, but you might hate them in the books too.
Yeah, that's possible.
There's a lot of stuff in those books that I can see Sarah hating. There's some stuff I don't like. I mean...
Well, I don't remember... Well... We don't have to get into that. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah. But no, I'm not quite there yet. And I'm trying to stay focused on my Traveler game, which is going to actually start, honest to goodness, playing this coming Tuesday.
And so everyone's done generating their characters?
Yes, we finished that this Tuesday.
How old is everybody?
We have two 42-year-olds, a 46-year-old, and a 50-year-old. So they've got a little bit of grizzle on them, but
I'm 42. Out well.
Yep.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you got some grizzle.
I'm grizzled.
But also, you lead a cushy life, so that doesn't count.
I do lead a cushy life, really. I mean, I always have, actually.
Like you and I, and our doctor, I told you about Dan's character and spent like 16 years as a doctor. He did only one career after that, and what he tried to do was parlay all of his success in his medical field into a stint as a career in the nobility, which is one of the choices. He particularly was going to be like a governmental administrator or something like that, but he failed to get in. He failed the entrance role, which means you have two choices at that point. You either submit to the military draft or you become a drifter.
What?
So he became a drifter. Specifically, he became a scavenger. So he spent 16 years as an incredibly successful physician and then ended up stuck on basically a scavenging ship looking for useful trash.
Wow.
For 4 years. And then now he's going out to the wild.
How could that happen realistically?
Because it makes total sense to me because I view it as a genuine, like, manipulative plan to make a ploy to get, you know, this high prestige sort of nobility thing.
Oh, so then when he failed his credibility...
Yeah, he invested a lot into it, he threw a lot of his influence behind it, and it all went up in smoke, and so he's now... It's less credible in that when he got his benefits for mustering out of the physician thing, he ended up with a fair bit of money.
Mm.
So odds are he could have lived off of that. Mm. But otherwise, I can totally see it happening. Mm. And also, there's psychological impact that I can sort of see. Because part of this whole thing was he was looking for a change because he'd had a fairly boring, mundane life. And so maybe this was his, you know, midlife crisis kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe.
So kind of like when you bought that motorcycle and that 16-year-old wife.
Yeah, that's somebody else. Yes. That wasn't me.
That guy from Lost. That supposed 16-year-old girl freaks me out. So how was your week, William?
I'm trying to remember. Let's see. We did watch a few movies this week.
A few? Wow.
Well,
I saw
like,
a new movie, too.
But... Not like in the theater, though.
Yeah, but still.
Like, we saw... We saw, now I'm drawing a blank on the name of it. I'll remember here in a second.
Welcome to William Have Remember Something. tries to remember the rest and then gives up.
No, I'm not going to give up. Adjustment Bureau. I didn't give up.
Oh, really, really? I heard incredibly pedestrian and mediocre things.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably.
Which is a shame because it seems so cool.
Well, I didn't. I mean, I liked it. I wouldn't say it's not going to blow you over or anything.
Well, in the thing that kills it for me, and the thing in the review that I read that made me no longer care about seeing it, is that the concept behind all the shadowy stuff pretty much never gets decently explained.
No, it's true. It doesn't really.
And I'm like, that's the only reason I want to see it. Oh, I want to is the mythology essentially.
Well, in the original material.
Wait, there's original material.
Yeah, it's based on I think it's a short story by Philip K. Dick.
Oh God! Well, that explains it. Anytime people take a classic short sci-fi story and turn it into a feature-length film, sucks.
Well, but it didn't suck. It just wasn't. I mean, I could see how this film, you know, there's nothing about it that's going to draw huge crowds or whatever. Given a certain year, though, I mean, if given a year where there aren't very many other things to watch. You know, it could have reasonably been a sleeper hit. You know,
in
what I'm
a suckier year, would have been more popular.
Not suckier year. You know I'm just saying
that's true of Ultraviolet.
Well, no. Actually, I mean, Ultraviolet was not that great.
But Ultraviolet was full on super not great.
There, like, I know, but there are a lot of films that are not. Gonna,
what the crap?
I don't know.
Who's at the door?
I don't know.
Open the door.
I have to get up to do it.
Oh, because your chair's in the way? Yeah, probably a Cheney who doesn't know any better. Hello?
Hey, Martha.
What's up?
I'm not interrupting you.
We're actually live recording right now our podcast.
Congratulations.
So say hi into the mic.
Hi, everyone.
This is Marcia, the next door neighbor. She's in there. And I don't think a hard hat because I don't think she's listened for a while.
Well.
What's the last episode you listened to? 5?
Something like that.
Oh.
Man, I cannot wait to see what the focus group does.
So here we... Yeah, they're gonna...
About the neighbor coming over. Hey.
Oh, we like her better than Ezzy.
We've never had the neighbor come over.
That anybody knows of.
Well, I mean, you know, as part of the show.
I think we're going to get comments that people think one of us faked the voice.
I don't think I sound enough... I mean, you don't sound anything like her.
Well,
I could probably...
I don't know if I should be offended or what. She has a very nice voice, so...
I don't know what to do.
Marge, are you coming back?
Because if I move the chair, it's in front of the door. And...
Marge!
What?
Are you coming back?
Yes.
Okay, because William can't sit down again then.
Why?
Well, it's the...
The positioning of his chair.
Sorry. But that's all right. I mean, if you're going to be here for a while...
If you're going to stay for a while, he can sit down. Yeah, I mean, it's whatever. Right.
I don't...
I'll go and let you do your stuff, and I'll talk to you later, maybe. Once my kids are in bed.
You can hang out. It's
Yeah. We don't want to run you off.
By the way,
write
this here. Episode 24.
Yay, 24!
There's enthusiasm.
Yes, for nice. 19 episodes behind... You could listen for almost an entire day with no sleep.
What a fantastic idea. Who needs sleep? You don't get it at my house.
There we go. At her house is a one-year-old and a three-year-old, for people who want the explanation on that.
I haven't seen her in a while, so it's kind of nice to you.
Yeah. Yeah, you were here for the graduation.
Yes.
That was last time. Wow.
That's been a while back.
We've had a couple of birthday parties since then. Those are more family things, I guess.
Neighbors coming out feels more like, you know, I Love Lucy or something. Maybe that's an angle we can take.
But William, I want to be in the show!
Let me explain something to you.
Okay, anyway, so...
What were we talking about?
We were talking about Adjustment Bureau and nobody cares.
Well, okay.
But how it would have been better in a year against Ultraviolet.
No. What I mean is... It's not a bad film. It's just not a...
Good film?
No, it's just not a... It's not exciting or anything, you know. It's not something you're on the edge of your seat or something the whole time, which some people might have expected when they were going to it. But if it if it would kind of snuck into theaters and there wasn't a lot of other things going on and people went in without any expectations at all, I think they would have watched it and thought it was quite good.
Yeah, it seems, I mean, you might, you got me a little curious, but I don't like that we're in this era where we have all these qualifications. Like, it's so seldom that we can be like, this was just a good movie.
Well, but, yeah, I know, but the thing is, the qualifications come sometimes just because our film market operates in a very particular way.
Well, that is true.
So, like, an independent film that I think is outstanding, if you ask me if it's going to do well in the box office, of course, I'll tell
but
you
probably
not. But
that's the thing, though. I'm not asking you, should people be spending money on the Adjustment Bureau? I'm saying, you saw the Adjustment Bureau. How was it?
Well, I liked it.
And even you're being like,
No, I liked it, but...
So you thought it was good.
You heard a lot of mediocre things about it, you said, and I understand how that could happen, okay. But not because it's a mediocre film.
But you think it's good and you would recommend it to me.
Oh, well, that's a whole other question.
Ultimately, I still believe that the world goes away when I close my eyes. So, ultimately, anytime I want to know your reaction to a movie, I just want to know, do you think I should see it?
I'm curious to know what you think of it.
Okay.
But it's, is it your kind of film, really? Don't know.
Okay. The premise sounded like it at first.
Well,
but again, the not answering that kind of shit.
The thing is, I think the premise builds certain expectations
that it doesn't deliver on.
Well, it, like you said before, if you're interested in sort of the mythos kind of stuff behind it, not a lot of explanation of that. That's not really the point of the story.
And I'm okay with that in certain situations. Really, that's the only thing that appealed to me about the film, the way they sold it. So But I don't know. If you say that's not the point, now I'm more curious.
It's not really the point. It's billed as a romantic thriller, which I think suits it.
As opposed to a thrilling romance.
Well, yes, actually. And I'm not usually one for romance anything. But it seemed like that element of the story served its purpose well, and it wasn't really, well, a romantic thriller. Like, it's a thriller with romance in it, not a romance that's a thriller.
Yes.
Yeah, so it seemed to work out pretty well. I mean, we watched it, and then it's a Netflix movie that we got in the mail, and we even kept it overnight to show the kids, and they're watching it now. So.
What else?
Sucker Punch, which... was
here's the funny thing about Sucker Punch. I still haven't seen it, but I'm guessing it actually passes the Bechdel test.
Which is what?
I think that's what it's called. This is the test that is a bottom level to just... It's a test for the beginnings of gender equality and not being sexist in a film. And it's not the definition. It is a bottom rung.
Oh,
for movies to do. And
so
this is
like
the
three
rules.
Questions.
Yes.
Yeah. I remember this. Art,
well, and so we'll see if the Sucker Punch passes it.
Okay. Go.
Are there two women in the movie?
Yes.
Do the women have a conversation together, like the two of them?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. Is that conversation not about a man?
Okay, now this is where I get confused with the three questions. They have to have any conversation. They can't have any conversation.
No.
But they just...
Is there a conversation in the film that takes place between two women that is not about a man? Seriously? The movie's just about five chicks, like, the whole time, and you're telling me you're not sure?
Well, pretty much every conversation they have involves a plot that... The whole origin of the plot is to avoid the arrival of a particular man.
God damn it.
So, in a sense, every time they talk about the plot...
They're talking about...
You know what I mean?
Wow.
And he's mentioned, of course. He's not always mentioned. Sometimes they have a conversation and they don't talk about him. And also... And actually, every section of the plot, like, there's certain things they have to accomplish. And to accomplish those things... always involves interacting with or deceiving and or getting around some guy.
Oh, okay.
So even if they don't talk about, I mean, it's part of, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay,
so skip that then. Just tell me.
Well,
he's making a lot of pained expressions,
yes,
people.
Yes, I don't know.
A lot of pained expressions.
Here's the thing. There were some things about it from just a strictly artistic standpoint that I thought were very good.
Really?
Yeah, but...
Because I've been hearing that it's just too damn much.
Well...
I've been hearing that it's just vomits special effects and stylized look to the degree that... No one thing matters because the whole thing's just ridiculous.
Well, except that all of that stylized stuff is kind of part of it. You know, some films you watch and there's all this stylized stuff and it's really a distraction. Whereas in this film, it's like the stylized stuff has kind of been built into the story.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is the point of it because it's essentially all, for simplification and lack of spoilers, most of it is basically a hallucination kind of thing.
Yes, and...
It is a trip into the mind, as it were.
Even given that, it's pretty intense in those regards, so I can understand someone thinking, yeah, this is just way too much.
I've heard that it's just so much that, like, it loses its spectacle feel because it's just solid spectacle, so it all starts looking the
same. Well, what happens by the end of the film, you do get the feeling that what happened was the creator of the story, who's also the director...
Zack fucking Snyder.
Yeah. That he had certain action sequences in mind for like maybe three or four other movies and decided and came up with some plot he could wrap it in so he could do all of these sequences in one movie. And
how surprising.
And,
that's so unlike him.
And also to have the characters in these sequences be young women sort of dressed like strippers.
Of course, yes.
In a context where that not only doesn't make sense, but, you know, it would make more sense for them to actually not be dressed that way.
Yeah.
In the context of the story. So you can't escape noticing what the director himself admitted, which is, well, yeah, you know, I threw some of my own teenage fetishes and fantasies.
It's a giant 14-year-old boner, yeah.
And, you know, so, and that's really... bothersome in the film. And yet, I don't know, there were other things in it that seemed to go right, and I'm having a hard time. It's almost as if in the sequences where they were dressed like this, where it didn't make sense, they were actually dressed in a way that did make sense, that would have fixed a lot of things story-wise.
Yeah.
I can't explain it, but
well, no, I mean, throwing the overt sexualization into it, and especially from what I know of the plot, where that's really inappropriate in opinion.
Yeah. I mean,
just fucks it up. There,
again, I don't think I'm giving too much away to say they're fighting, yes. and there are supporting characters fighting, and they're appropriately dressed. I mean, they're men, of course, but you know, and this also is going on inside the mind of a young woman who, given her circumstance, would probably not fantasize about herself being dressed
absolutely,
this way,
absolutely,
or her peers.
Ultimately, underneath this giant teenage fetish party is, and this is what disturbs me the most, is ultimately a story involving abuse.
Well, right.
And I think it's terrible that we use that as the jumping point for this giant adolescent wank fest. I'm like, that's like triply disgusting.
But what's fascinating me about the whole thing is that as I think about how it could have been fixed, I just can't get over the fact that it seems like a simple wardrobe change would have probably fixed it all, and I don't know. Something about that seems really odd to me because it seems like it shouldn't be that simple. It should be that there were other things wrong with it. And there were some other issues with the plot and script and stuff, but
nothing that's clear. And what you're talking about is a subtext issue, a really big subtext issue.
Yeah.
And frequently that is something as simple as, you know, how were they dressed? Why was that character of that particular ethnicity? Why did they have to use that particular slang term? Like, that's frequently a kind of thing. And especially in this one where it's such in your face. I hate to use that phrasing, but that's the way. I can totally understand that. And again, not having seen the movie, but what you're none of what you're saying surprises me. What you're saying is pretty much what I expect.
Well, another thing is I didn't sense that. Maybe this is another part of it that I haven't quite put my finger on yet, but it's not just how women are dressed in films in general that is objectifying. It's how they're actually shot. Angles, close-ups, whatever. And I guess I didn't. Maybe I'd have to watch it again to know for sure, but and anyone else who's seen it, who's more, you know, perhaps more sensitive to these things than I am, can correct me here, but I don't recall a lot of as much of those types of objectifying shots. I'm sure there were some, but I mean, as many as you would expect, given, I don't know.
Well, honestly, I think a lot of this is unconscious on the director's part, so. The two may be
incongruous. Yeah, but he admitted it, though. He admitted
on a certain level, yes. Yeah. But I think he may not be aware that the wardrobe thing, like when he talks about this being a lot of his fantasies and fetishes, I think he means that in a grander scale. I don't think he's necessarily aware of like what an impact just the costuming had. Zack Snyder is probably my second least favorite director out there after Brett Ratner, and. A lot of it, I think, is because I think he doesn't get it a lot. He makes movies, and he has a message, and I'm like, you have no idea all the other shit you're saying in here at the same time. And Watchmen was a huge one. I saw Watchmen, and I was really mad, and part of that was because I was stupid enough to read it again right before I saw it. But ultimately, it's because... I mean, I really do think that Zack Snyder is a huge fan of the graphic novel, and I really do think that he tried to stick to it as best as he could, and what I ultimately think is he didn't get that graphic novel.
Yeah, okay.
And he didn't get it in ways that I think a lot of people don't get it. But I honestly think, it was through no manipulation on his part, or through no lack of genuine enthusiasm and desire to make this work. I think he didn't get the book, and therefore the movie didn't get the book.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And I think this is the same. I don't think he's understanding what he's doing.
Yeah, but this is his story. I mean, he came up with it, didn't he? Didn't he originate the story and everything? I
think something like that, yeah, but...
I
mean, a bare-bones story, then you flesh it out. And again, I don't think he's aware of all the subtext he's putting out there.
Maybe not.
Because some of it becomes just socialized cliche anyway. I mean, there's a significant number of people out there that say, of course they're dressed like strippers. Same reason that comic book superheroines always have giant breasts and stuff like that. Yeah, it's because people like to see that, you know?
Well, and men like to. But you're right. But
men and filthy, filthy lesbians.
Well, I was... it's interesting that you should bring this up because recently I had the opportunity to talk to a friend of my goddaughter's who goes to school with her who's a video game player. And
wait, teenager? Video game player?
15 years
old. They do that?
I guess.
I didn't realize young people played the video games.
Are you kidding?
I thought that was mostly an old person thing.
No. You know they play.
Senior citizens doing Wii bowling and stuff
but,
like that.
So I asked her about... what kinds of characters she likes to play, what kind of games she likes to play. And she said she prefers games with male characters in them because the games with female characters, they're ridiculous.
Yeah.
If the game isn't ridiculous itself, which it usually is, the female character is ridiculous.
Yes.
And I asked her, you know, if she thought, and she acknowledged that it's kind of unusual, she said, to find a young woman her age who is into video games. And I asked her if she thought maybe that was the reason. And I don't think she thought about it, you know, because, you know, when you're young, especially, you just sort of gravitate toward what you like and you might not really think about it very much. But she considered it and she thought that yeah, that might be part of the problem. It was interesting because my 14-year-old godson was there, and he was saying that, well, if they made a video game that girls would like, it'd have to have shoes and all this other stuff. And I said, see, that thinking is part of the problem. You know, if you really think, if you think that because that's all you've ever heard girls around you talk about, well, then you've not really taken the time to, you know, you haven't taken the time to get to know what they're really about, because that's surely not all they're interested in.
Yeah.
And
there's a balance here, because part of it to me is women playing video games, especially online ones, is an ever-increasing demographic, and it's getting bigger all the time. Mm. And I think people who are creating games and consciously or unconsciously marketing to certain demographics hasn't caught up yet, the fact that women totally play video games. I think that's part of it. The other part, unfortunately, is the same thing all over the place all the time, which is that when people make shit, they make it with men in mind, unless they specifically are thinking about women, and then they make it pink and low calorie.
Yeah.
And so I don't know which of those wins out. Part of me hopes that it's just taking time, and they're going to figure out this demographic, and they're going to focus to this demographic, and they're going to say, what do you want? And part of me just thinks, no, they're going to do it, and the women who want to play video games are just going to play it, and they're going to be big jiggly boobs, and that's going to be annoying to them, but they see it everywhere else, so they're just going to suck it up and play the game anyway.
Well, I think that's actually the case. I mean, in this young woman's case, she just starts playing male characters. It doesn't bother her to play a male character.
But there are circumstances where you can't. And I know this is an issue, because I know with certain people in your household and other households I know, it is a major factor. It's not the deciding factor, but there is a major weight placed on whether or not you can play a female. And if you cannot play a female, those people are less likely to purchase and play that game.
That's true.
And I think, and that's a sign of that demographic pressure.
Yeah, right.
Now, in this case, you're sort of dealing with the opposite, and you're dealing with a larger issue of not, it's not that you want to play females, you want to play a female, it doesn't look ridiculous.
Right.
And that's a different thing. But the fact that that gender in video games does actually affect some buying power in a way that I at least have been able to note measurably, I hope is a good sign.
Yeah, but the problem is that the game manufacturers, when they want feedback about their games, they ask people who are already playing games.
Yeah.
They don't go and find the people who aren't and say, hey, what's it going to take? Well, of course, that's changed recently. I mean, a lot of game developers have thought, well, maybe there's a market out there for female gamers, and maybe we should ask women who don't play games what it would take for them to be interested in playing.
And at this point, sexism has not caused the game to flop.
No.
Which is what it would take for this to really have an impact.
I suppose that's true.
At this point, you'd have to get hit in the market because your game had sexist or misogynist issues. And that certainly has not happened at this point.
Well, yeah, so...
And that's of course, a tie-around, because a lot of the sexist and misogynist shit that might cause women to not purchase your game will totally make the 14-year-old boys buy it all the more.
That's right.
So we're fucked either way.
So when we finished watching, it was I wasn't sure how to feel about it.
I appear still not sure how to feel about it.
I should take that back. I know how to feel about it. I'm not that excited about the film. However, our goddaughter is sort of an aspiring filmmaker, so we decided that maybe she should give it a look and see what she thinks. And, you know, she got some, as someone who's aspiring to that, she got some stuff out of it.
And was way into the shoes, right?
No, she also thought that a lot of parts of it didn't make sense, of course. She's a very aware 15-year-old woman, going to be 16 in October, so.
So old.
So I don't know. It's not a film I would recommend, but the visual effects were very stunning. I don't know how overwhelming I thought they were, but, you know, it's on a tiny little screen.
I was going to say, your TV's not as big as mine.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
What else did you see?
We did see something else, but I really don't remember what that was at all. So.
Wow. And then gives
up. I am giving up on that one.
Well, we saw something.
What'd you see?
Last night via Netflix. Well, here's the thing. So Netflix is getting evil, you know? They're doing this new thing starting September 1st. Separate charge for the streaming stuff and for the other.
Yeah, yeah.
And we, like many people in the world, in fact, the majority of people apparently, have been on the streaming plus one DVD plan, which was $10 a month, but which will now be $16 a month. And we have opted, like many people, that we're going to switch to the no DVDs and just pay $8 a month for the streaming because we watch it through the PS3 and it's fine. And unlike a lot of people who have had the one DVD plan, ours has been tied up in a copy of Grizzly Man Diaries that my wife got and lost a long time ago. Really long time ago. But apparently the impetus that we really needed to take care of this was the fact that they were going to charge us and we needed to switch to no DVDs. So, this weekend, I set our new plan and said, by the way, lost Grizzly Man Diaries, yes, we'll pay for it, da-da-da-da. But because we did that, and because the new plan doesn't kick in until September, they start sending us DVDs again. So we got another one, and we looked, and we're like, well, this is fine. So what we got was a movie called In Bruges. It's about 3 years old. I don't know if you've heard of it.
No.
Didn't know a lot about it. I remember when it came out, and we were interested. Basically, here's what I could tell from trailers and things like that. It was a European made movie. It's a British made movie. It's the Channel 4's film company. British made movie. Basically a crime movie. In the you know, like Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels and stuff. It involves criminals, professional criminals. Comedy.
Hmm.
Colin Farrell, Ralph Fiennes involved.
Okay.
And just look weird. And it all revolves around this town in Belgium called Bruges that they're in.
Okay.
And how sort of ridiculous that is. And that was basically it. And it looked very sort of wacky, crazy, funny. And it got really good reviews.
Hmm.
And so we always wanted to see it. And so we went, we saw it, you know, now. And it basically is that. It's a couple of hitmen who just finished a job in London and are told by their boss to go and lay low in Bruges, which is this town in Belgium. And they don't know why they were sent there in particular. And one of them especially really doesn't like it because it's this little medieval town in Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
And hijinks ensue. It was awesome.
Was it?
It was awesome. With the following qualifications.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
It's very dark.
Okay.
And as a corollary to that, it is quite violent in places.
Mm-hmm.
Quite bloody and violent.
Does not pass the Bechdel test.
Does not pass the Bechdel test at all. For those of you who couldn't hear it, that was my wife yelling that in the background. Yeah, does not pass the Bechdel test at all. There is literally one woman in it. Yeah, there's literally one woman in that whole movie. That's what's so scary about the Bechdel test, is it is such a bare minimum, and the vast majority of movies do not.
Yeah, that was kind of the point of bringing it up, to say, look,
frightening.
Let's just make it bare bones, and does the movie meet these three criteria, and how many movies that do not?
And how many movies just die on the two women? It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what scared me, is your movie, Sucker Punch, where it has five main characters, all women, and it still can't pass the damn test.
No, not by but my standards.
Does not pass the Bechdel test. Very violent, very dark. As a corollary, lot of swearing. Hardcore swearing. To the degree that a special feature on the DVD was basically an edited clip version of all the swearing in a row. That's like the solid 5-minute thing of just F-bombs. It was really kind of funny. And yeah, it is very dark. It deals with some nasty, violent stuff. Conceptually as well as on screen.
Yeah.
And if... No, I'll leave it at that. Those are the things, basically. If that's okay with you, it is hilarious. Trish, who, you know, can take that kind of stuff, but that's not... Like, I will tend to watch a movie like that more quickly than she will, I would say. Seriously, as it finishes, she's like, that was awesome. It is just hilarious. It has got some, and it's Colin Farrell as the main character, and it's a role like I've never seen him in before. I mean, he's a hitman, and he's one of those like lovable but a jackass at the same time kind of thing. But he's really stupid, and I've never seen him play that. He does it really well. Like he'll explain stuff and talk about, and he's just an idiot, and it's really well done. And Ralph Fiennes in a very different sort of role for him. I really liked. It's if you can handle that kind of stuff, I'm pretty sure. I don't know how you would react. I'm pretty sure no one in your household should see that movie except possibly you. I can kind of think of specific reasons for everyone.
Okay.
But especially the other adult in your house, I can think of very specific reasons why it would not fly there.
Okay.
But it was just hilarious. Oh my God. We're dying. And it's just, and it's really weird. It reminds me. Did you see Burn After Reading? The Coen Brothers.
Oh yeah.
It reminds me of that, but where that one is decidedly American in its feel, this is decidedly British/European in its feel.
Okay.
But it had that same sort of thing, because it was Coen Brothers, so there was a lot of violence snuck in there. This was more violent, but, you know, same sort of thing. I mean, it wasn't constant violence. It was the same sort of, just spontaneously, like, holy shit, somebody got shot in the head, and they're showing it, you know, that kind of thing. And just the weirdness, like, dealing with some real stuff in the midst of this ridiculousness and the funny bits and the, you know, and it switches very quickly and that same sort of, you're like, what the hell am I watching? But you don't really care because you love it, because it's really, it was that same sort of vibe that I got from Burn After Reading. I think I like this better than Burn After Reading. This has more cohesion to it. Coen Brothers get a little schizoid sometimes, and I think Burn After Reading was one of their primary, like, they were really schizophrenic in that one. And don't get me, I really enjoyed Burn After Reading at the time, but, like, I never need to see it again. I would totally watch this movie again.
It was called what again?
In Bruges.
In Bruges.
Which is spelled Bruges. And it's probably, like, the second biggest city in Belgium. Like, there's Brussels, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's this. But it's in Belgium, so it's not. I saw one of the first, like, one of the original narration with Colin Farrell is like, they pick up the phone, they say, get to Bruges. I didn't even know where Bruges was. And they start going on, then you get, turns out it's in Belgium. And that's a constant thing, too, because he hates Bruges. Like, that's an ongoing thing. It's like,
well, at least he knew where Belgium was.
At least he knew where Belgium was, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's got PC issues. If that's a thing. Well, to be honest, if you cut through the first rules I said, I'm guessing PC-ness is not an issue.
Probably not.
Yeah. But messes around some random racism in a couple places. Just out of, I mean, and it's never glorified. It's always like, look at this idiot being racist.
Yeah.
But just at least one of them, especially, where I actually paused it and was like, why was, what? Because it was a long, deep description meant to be ridiculous, and they just happened to throw in black. And I'm like, why were they black? Why did that get put in there? What did that have to do with anything? In other words, stuff. And there is a little person in the movie that figures prominently, and people's unpolitically correct dealings with the concept of little people also figures prominently.
I see.
And I thought it was Peter Dinklage in it. It's not. It's a guy named Jeremy Preston, I think, who isn't very old, and apparently Trish Lignorm, when he was 13, he played Howard the Duck in Howard the Duck.
Huh.
Which is weird to me. But anyway, for those of you who can stomach all the shit I just said, I highly recommend that movie.
We've probably eaten up a ton of time.
Only 44 minutes.
Oh my gosh. What are we gonna do?
If we're lucky, two questions.
We're gonna...
It's a hat. For those of you just turning in, I always think that's awesome on a podcast. Like, people are like, I'm going to start at minute 44. Now, for those of you who have never listened to the podcast before, the whole idea of this is that you write things in and we pull them out of the hat and talk about them until we're sick of you. But we like to do a little bit about how our week went, and apparently we had a very interesting week in that we both consumed a great deal of interesting media.
Yes, because that's all we ever talk about.
No new cancer this week.
That's good to know. Good to know.
Bless me.
Yes, bless you.
Okay, draw something out of the hat. Hat of magical. Seems a little.
Seems a little sparse. Have we been getting very many submissions of the hat?
We haven't been getting a lot, but it's also possible that the hat has been a little lax in its transmutation into note cards.
Okay.
But we have been a little bit lately. We're getting a lot more of more of these things where like one person sends in a bunch of questions. So, people, write some shit in, and you know you don't have to be a lot. Just a question or two or something. It's fine. It's good. Send them in. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Write it. You know you want to. Who are you to resist? Okay, Sir William. Who's our question from?
Our question is from our mutual friend Mick. The knife.
Make the knife.
And he wants to know, do you think Cars 2 signals the end of Pixar as we know it? I presume he means that Cars 2 was not of typical Pixar
quality. Was not of Pixar quality. I say no, and I'll tell you why. Because Cars 1 was not the end of Pixar as we knew it. And therefore, why should Cars 2 be?
You didn't like Cars
1? I did not like Cars 1. I did not see Cars 1 until recently because it held no interest for me. And now I've seen it, and it holds no interest for me. I think Pixar makes some wonderful movies. Largely, I like Pixar's movies because I feel that they are very multi-level and that kids can appreciate them and adults can appreciate them. I find both of the Cars movies to be solidly in the movies for fucking kids camp. And I think that is a waste of Pixar's talents.
Well, I shouldn't try to read Mick's mind here, but I would think that some people might ask this question. Whether Mick would ask it for this reason or not, I don't know. Some people might wonder if Pixar's deepening relationship with Disney it has any relationship with.
Which I find odd, because I don't know that it's deepening, except in that more years have gone by. I mean, it's always been Disney-Pixar, I mean, you know.
Well, it changed a little bit. The Pixar was, I think, and again, listeners can correct me if I'm wrong, but Pixar was a studio.
No, listeners will correct you if you're wrong.
Pixar was a studio that was affiliated, or, you know, kind of a...
Contracted.
Or whatever, they were the studio that Disney owned or whatever, but now there are like Disney animators and Pixar animators are like in the same space, and you know what I mean? It's
oh my god, the intermixing of the breeds.
Yeah, it's a little bit different.
Yeah,
Disney is a little more hands on with Pixar than they used to be. Not that that should change anything, but
and when this Celtic Disney princess Pixar Reese Witherspoon bullshit comes out, this may matter. Brave is the next Pixar film.
Brave?
Yes. Hmm. And it is a movie about a Celtic chieftain's daughter who's basically tomboyish and therefore not appropriate to the world. And voiced by Reese Witherspoon, and is going to be a Disney princess. You know, in the official line of Disney princesses.
Oh, I see.
I think this will tell us a great deal. Because I see this as being possible to be very good and back on track where Pixar should be. And also I see this as possibly being a horrible train wreck. So we'll have to see. But there's a whole other angle we haven't considered here. It may be a question of economics. Because Pixar also is notoriously bringing in ridiculous amounts of money. Because everybody loves their films. And while Cars 2 has done good business, it kind of stopped abruptly when everybody that was over 5 said, hey, wait, this kind of sucks. Now, again, I don't know the figures, but I don't believe Cars 2 was nearly as much of a commercial success as many of the other Pixar films.
I don't know. I haven't even seen it.
Well, me neither.
But, okay, but the thing is, Pixar's never made a film that had a character in it that could become, or that anyone would reasonably think to be a Disney princess. I mean, that's...
I know, I was really bothered by this when I heard it. But because Disney owns them, I don't think Pixar gets to decide.
Although, they could be creative. And I mean, there are female characters in the other movies, you know.
Great, but what are you doing?
Actually, not only are there female characters in the other movies, but in Ants, or not Ants, sorry, that's the other movie. In Bug's Life, the main female character is a princess.
Well, there we go.
And then there's that car in Cars, and then there's
Princess Car.
There's the...
For those of you who have been hearing a little noise in the background, our third and most timid cat, who I never thought would come out here, Gray Boy, is out here. Gray Boy, say something for the peoples. Or sniff my glass of water.
I don't think he wants to say anything.
I'm really shocked he's out here.
But he was saying something a second ago.
He was very unhealthy recently. He's prone to some bad bladder infections now because he's older and it's not. And he gets them every once in a while. But we got him on his antibiotics and he's doing much better, aren't you, Gray Boy?
Yeah, looks like he is. What do you think he wanted coming out here meowing?
Usually to be petted.
Oh.
That's pretty much all he ever wants is food and to be petted. And he'll whine about either one for quite some time.
Is he going to have a seat and just enjoy the show? Or?
I don't know.
Looks like that might be what he does.
Oh, careful.
So your answer to Mick's question is no.
We don't know, Mick. We haven't seen it. Stop bugging us. That's my answer. No. I hope not. I don't know. I don't think we can be sure yet. Because that's the thing. We don't know if it's the end until we see what happens next.
Like
it was clearly a misstep. Yeah. Will it completely kill Pixar? That depends on how their next thing is. Yeah. Everybody can fuck up once. The question has become whether it becomes a pattern.
Yeah.
And since I'm hoping Larry the Cable Guy will not be voicing any characters in this next film, that could be a good sign.
Maybe we'd better draw something else while we still have time.
Okay.
We got to at least get to. Least.
Or what? Are you going to cry?
No, it's just that's what the show's about. And we talk for 45 minutes, which isn't great, but maybe people don't like hearing us just chew the fat.
Screw you, it's my show.
For 45 minutes.
Okay.
It's the hat show, really.
It is an anonymous question. Ooh. Given that my wife is listening in from the other room this time, I'm nervous about this one. I just want to say, don't blame the messenger of that. I think what he's trying to do is get down, and he can't figure out a way to do that. So I'm going to do it for him. There you go, guy boy. Okay. Question is as follows. Not so much a question as a topic. It is not socially acceptable to have ketchup on a hot dog unless your age is 9 or less. Discuss. Pretty much that's what my wife has on a hot dog, is ketchup.
It's not socially acceptable to have ketchup on a hot dog unless you're 9 or less. Well, I'm at a loss here because I'm not sure what difference it would make whether or not you have ketchup on a hot dog as far as etiquette.
Well, and I'm trying to figure this out because if you're talking, I can see the argument. I'm not saying I agree with the argument. I can see the argument if you are talking about just ketchup on a hot dog. That is something that one would often associate as, like, you know, that single condiment being the only okay thing as a kid kind of thing. Whereas adults are more involved in their condiments. But if we're just talking about the presence of ketchup at all, pretty much any variant on a hot dog other than plain tends to have ketchup on it. The all-American version is ketchup, mustard, relish, onions. I'm pretty sure the Chicago style, somewhere in the 8 billion things that go on there, is ketchup.
So you're saying that this person means ketchup only?
I'm saying if they don't mean that, I'm confused.
Okay.
Because it seems like there's a lot of variants that use ketchup.
You're right, they probably mean
unless
ketchup
I'm wrong, and Chicago style doesn't, and that's the whole point, is Chicago style puts every goddamn thing on there except ketchup? I don't know. And so maybe this person is saying that's what's going on.
No, you're right, they probably mean ketchup by itself. Like that's a lightweight thing to do.
A little kiddie kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do gross. On my hot dogs, mayo.
Yeah.
Just mayo.
Back when I ate
sometimes hot, just mayo and onions, but
back when I ate hot dogs, I would do mayo on hot dogs.
Because I'll do mayo on anything.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, me too. But when I did eat hot dogs, and then later when I ate, you know, fake hot dogs, which I don't even eat those anymore, but I like to put lots of stuff on them, you know, chili and onions and, you know, sauerkraut or, you know, ketchup actually is not something that I think of putting on a hot dog, even with all that other stuff.
But what about when you were eight?
I don't know. Relish, I love pickle relish on a hot dog.
Dill relish or sweet relish?
Either one.
Whoa!
Yeah, sometimes you both.
You slut!
So, yeah, for me, for whatever reason, and I can't explain why, ketchup is like... No, I don't think even when I was young... when I was young, I was odd. I liked mustard on everything, including my french fries, so... And potato chips and everything else.
What are you, Sling Blade?
I guess. When I watched Sling Blade and he talked about putting mustard on his
french fried taters.
I thought, yeah, I'm with you on that.
And Carl, then you took that
some people call it Kaiser blade. I call it Sling Blade.
Oh my God, I have to watch that movie again now thinking of you. That is awesome.
Have you seen the short with Molly Ringwald in it?
Arm around you now. That's okay with you.
I like the way you talk, dude. Yeah.
We totally need to remake that now. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I
get to be Steven Root's character talking to you about picking up trannies when we're in this island.
Okay.
Trish will be Dwight Yoakam.
If this person is saying that you know you shouldn't just put ketchup on a hot dog, well, I'm with them on that. But whether or not it's socially acceptable, I think a person can put on a hot dog whatever they like, especially considering what's in a hot dog. I mean, if you have the guts to eat a hot dog, you can put on it whatever you want or nothing.
They should make hot dogs with the ketchup already inside.
Oh no!
It's like a tunnel of ketchup injected inside.
Do we have time for another one? Come on.
Yeah, okay.
I
got shit to do, though, like going to sleep.
We got at least should do... Now, three, I feel okay, because even days where we draw three out, like, from the very beginning... Oh, crap.
You forced it on us.
Dear TMTH, which was better, the new or original Battlestar Galactica? Craig,
which I believe is Craig Duffy from Scotland.
Here we go again, because the hat is uncanny. Just last night, I watched the first episode of the original Battlestar Galactica
on a
whim.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay, now then give us the opening speech. I love that thing.
Well, I didn't memorize the
opening
speech.
Some believe that there may yet be brothers of man who even now fight to survive. Somewhere beyond the heavens.
Okay, great.
And I still haven't seen the more recent one, so
at
you
all?
Can't talk much.
Well, I
saw the original miniseries, and I disliked it enough that I did not watch the series. Oh. Since then, I have decided, of course, I have to watch the series, but I haven't gotten around to it yet because my DVR keeps recording new things.
Okay, the new one... Well, okay.
They're just so ridiculously different.
Well, yeah, recently I read there are these series of books. Maybe some of you have heard of them. That they're philosophy books, but they're like pop culture and philosophy. So there's a Star Wars and philosophy, Harry Potter and philosophy, South Park and philosophy, Simpsons and philosophy, and there's a Battlestar Galactica and philosophy. Which basically these books are philosophers of different types talk about certain philosophical themes in pop culture references. And Battlestar Galactica, someone argued in there that you really can't compare these two shows.
No. Well, the original one was very strongly an allegory for the Book of Mormon, basically.
Yes, that's correct.
Very strongly.
That's point number one. Point number two is, like the new one, it was written very... much with its times kind of in mind.
Oh, yes. It's very much a product of, what is it, late 70s? Yeah, you know, it is very much a product
Cold
of
War. The Cylons obviously represented communists, and you know the president, who in the very first show is kind of weak on, you know, wanting to think that they want peace just like we want peace and everything, very much in line with how a lot of people felt about any politicians at the time who had any hope that the communists and the Americans could get along. So, you know, they're made for very different times, and you know, watching the original, and also you have to take into account, you know, technology that they had available back then and things like that. You really can't fault the original for having crappy special effects or anything like that.
No, the special effects at the time were impressive enough that I have seen low budget movies that stole footage from it.
Well. And as I was watching it, I was thinking, this isn't, you know, this isn't that bad.
For the late 70s, like, other than Star Wars, it's the best sci-fi effects I've seen time
period. On television.
Yeah.
So, I was watching and thinking, this really isn't half bad special effects. So, when you take all the stuff that's really unfair to criticize out of it, you really have a show that, you know, it's every bit as good in terms of trying to be relevant for the times. Although I would say that the reason I like the new Battlestar Galactica better isn't because, you know, the effects are better or anything else. The original Battlestar Galactica, I felt like, really kind of took a side. You know, it was trying to be it was trying to be a parable of sorts, and it definitely took a side on what it was saying, whereas Battlestar Galactica, I thought, really did a good job of trying to show all sides of it and tried to kind of, like, their whole message wasn't about a particular side, but to say, you know, every side has their argument.
Well, and yeah.
It's hard to, it's really hard to pick sides in complex issues, so that's why I like the new one better.
In a moral sense, they're exact opposites, because the original was one of the most black and white moral things ever. And to a certain degree, I think you could make the argument that the new one is almost about moral ambiguity and moral gray areas.
Well, yeah. And
and at least moral relativism.
Even with the Cylons, you could tell the people who made the show were almost embarrassed to have a faction that it was really hard to get the audience to sympathize with. I mean, they attack these, you know, genocide, basically. So how can you possibly make the Cylons sympathetic characters? And they, I think they tried and it didn't really work, not in a distracting way, but you could tell that the creators who worked so hard to help you see every side of every story, I think they were kind of bothered that they had to have these villains that, you know, were pretty bad, and there wasn't really anything you could do about it.
And again, not seeing it, but having too many things slip in, it seems like the way they countered it was just to make the humans bigger assholes.
Well,
Cylons may suck, but hey, the good guys aren't so great either.
Except you could almost always understand that. It's like, well, their whole race was wiped out by these guys.
Well, because you're talking about, I mean, I know they're not, but you're essentially talking about aliens.
Yeah. Well,
and if you're really going to do that, then they have to be... You want to sympathize with them, but they have to be alien, and that's the point.
Well, and also that in the earlier part of the show, they couldn't technically die, and I mean all of this stuff that would made it very difficult to get people to sympathize with the Cylons. I think their ultimate strategy was, well, I won't say what.
Yeah, no. I think we're getting dangerously close to spoilers.
I don't want to spoil anything for you, but you know, I liked the new one better because for that moral ambiguity. But other than that, I don't think you can really compare the two. And when I saw the original, I was kind of impressed with the special effects, how good they were for the time. And the storytelling was actually pretty good, and the characters were fun to watch. And
compared to and don't get me wrong, I loved it. But back in the day, I pretty much equated Battlestar Galactica and Buck Rogers because I watched them both and liked them both.
Yeah.
Wow, there's no comparison. Buck Rogers was shit compared to Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, well, it was
fun. And I still think it's fun to watch.
Yeah, it was.
But it's on a different, completely different level.
It was really fun to watch. I just kind of, like I said, on a whim, I just turned it on and decided to watch it. And I loved watching it because it just, there were so many things I remembered from when I watched it when I was a kid. Yeah. And I was so excited to watch it when I was a kid. Battlestar Galactica caused the only huge fight in our house that we ever really had. I mean, we had squabbles. This kid would fight with this kid, and mom would fight with dad's. But a rift in our house was caused by Battlestar Galactica.
Was this Team Apollo versus Team Starbuck?
No. It was Battlestar Galactica. We watched the first, I don't know how many shows in it was.
There were only like 25 in the whole thing.
Okay, but it was going to be on the same night that The Sound of Music was on another channel.
Ooh.
And my mom wanted to watch The Sound of Music, and we'd all seen The Sound of Music.
Well, it's not like Sound of Music isn't going to be on again.
Well, I mean, that's right. It was its yearly whatever. And that was our argument was, hey, look, we watched this last year and the year before that and the year before that. It's going to be on next year. I mean, this was before videotapes and stuff, you know, so there wasn't any...
And this was before the level of encore presentations that you have.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. So, but still, it was going to be on in another year. We all knew
it. Absolutely.
But this, we didn't know when we get to see this again.
And net result?
Well... We ended up, there was an old console TV kind of stored in a back room in our house that we got going, and so we watched it real fuzzy on a old console TV. Well, you know, it was mom, so what are you going to do?
I knew mom would win, yeah.
But you know, I was watching, I was like, man, I remember this, and this was awesome, and we were very excited about Battlestar Galactica, and we liked it a lot, and it was fun to watch it again. I don't think I'm going to continue watching them, but...
No, it does start to weigh on you eventually.
But
especially near the end, when we get around close to Galactica 80, then it gets weird.
Yeah.
It gets really... When Patrick McNee shows up and he's like the devil and shit, it gets weird.
Well, yeah, and
that's the thing. It's like, it starts off very Book of Mormon, and then it kind of loses it, and then at the end it gets very Book of Mormon again.
Well,
and it gets freaky.
The thing is, after the first show, it... You know, it's really almost stops being about...
I thought the first couple...
Yeah.
Because I thought episode 2 and 3 dealt more with lost colonies and shit.
Yeah. And then they're just... You know, that becomes the reason they're out there, but it doesn't seem to matter anymore. Whereas in the new one, the fact that they're on their own and the colonies were destroyed is something that is an important, you know...
Oh, yeah.
And I like that better, too. So, you know, whatever. But it's so weird. I haven't watched the old one ever. And the hat knows. I know the hat does know.
The hat
weird
watches
stuff.
You when you sleep.
And it doesn't
and
like.
Talks to you and says, William, this is a dream. You need to get more mustard. Sorry, this is the 30 Rock thing that we recently saw again. When Tracy Morgan's character is hiding out in Liz Lemon's house all this time. He said, I watch you when you sleep. And then you cut to a scene and he says, Liz Lemon, this is a dream. You're out of mustard. And she says, and then it cuts back, and he's like, you're the one who wrote every kind of mustard on my shopping list. And he says, and you still didn't get the one I wanted. It comes in a red bottle. It says ketchup on it. Oh, I hear it now. That's on me. That show's hilarious.
All right, well, thank you, Mick and Craig and Anonymous, for your questions. Or comments, or I guess there were. Well, one was something discussed, and the other two were questions.
Yes. Thank you for your extra long episode.
And thank you, Marcia.
Yes, thank you, Marcia. Your presence was wonderful. And thank you, Grey Boy.
And Grey Boy.
And
Trish for her mentioning that.
And Trish
that
for
one,
yelling in the background yes. about the Bechdel test.
Yeah.
Which you may or may not have gotten recorded. If you'd like to write into the hat yourself, you should feel encouraged to do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. If you would like to talk with our other hard hat listeners and get involved in conversation and tell us what we did wrong, which is a popular thing, go to the blog and make some comments there. There's a lot of people who do. It's kind of fun. That is at themagicaltalkinghat.com. Did y'all hear that?
Probably not.
The thing only moved a little bit. To reiterate what my wife just said, if you want to yell things from the back room, bless me, marry me and hang out in the back room during our recording. That one's going to be harder. And we should have a new listener starting this week.
Really?
Yes.
Who's that?
Sue. Did you not see all this stuff from Sue?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Out of nowhere, back on Podomatic, I'm getting things that she subscribed there. Sue, and then she's on Facebook wanting to talk to me. And I'm like, how did she even find out about this? And then I figured out, like, apparently she's still kept in contact with you. I send her to the website because I'm like, Podomatic doesn't work. And then like 2 minutes later, she puts up a thing. She's like, why haven't you guys done any more shows since May? And I'm like, well, go to the actual website. We're doing them every week. We haven't missed a week yet.
I hope she catches up.
So, yes. So, welcome, Sue. So, yeah, you can still catch over there for the first like 8 episodes. But those of you, the rest of you, go to themagicaltalkinghat.com. Talk with people. Have a good time. Tell us what we did wrong. Flame us. Correct us. Laud us. And mostly just hang out. And otherwise, please disregard the last hour and 10 minutes and 40 seconds. This might be a record.
Oh, no.
And we will talk to you next week.
Next week.
So what do you put on? Why don't you eat fake hot dogs anymore?
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.